We are about to turn the page from our study guide, go to the back side. But before we do that, let's just real quickly, let me mention a couple of things about all of this. Again, keeping in mind that our goal here is to do what? With this particular study, what are we trying to accomplish here?
Basic platform from which to teach others.
Okay, basic skeleton outline of some key people and events that help us to kind of piece the Bible together. And then what we do from our study as we continue on in studying the Bible, then we, you know, we add the meat and the muscles and everything else to that skeleton. But this will help people to understand the basic fundamentals and make connections between a lot of things, especially that have happened in the Old Testament, to what's going on in the New Testament. Now, one of the things you have to keep in mind is this whole section, all these weeks that we've been studying here, looking at from the very top there at the creation, all the way down to the bottom where we were looking at last week and finishing up that with the wilderness wanderings, how much of the Bible does that part actually make up? What? Most of it is the first two chapters, but in actuality, when you go all the way through to the 40 years, you're actually looking at the first five books of the Old Testament. And so, one of the things I wanted to do, and I can't... Somebody got a timeline in the front of your Bible. Give us a, because I didn't write this down. This will just be some extra information. Who's got a timeline in front of your study Bible? Tell us how many years it is from the beginning up to this particular point. From the story of creation up to the end of Moses, beginning of Joshua. How many years are we talking about? I'm surprised that this... I'm using this new Bible that I have, and I didn't look to see it doesn't have one in there. Anybody got that? Where are you at, Miss Peggy? All right, we'll find it. Somebody look it up, find it for us, and we'll throw that in later. But you know, we're looking at up to this point, the first five books of the Old Testament is where all of this information comes from. The majority of the historical information is coming from the first two books. Okay, from Genesis, which makes up a major portion of those events, all the way from the story of creation up to the time of Moses. So we've got the whole, all of this patriarchal age that is during, basically in the time of the book of Genesis. We move then to the book of Exodus, and we find the beginning of what is referred to as the Mosaic Age. Okay? The Mosaic Age, by the way, is going to take us all the way to what point in Bible history? These things are not written on your outline. You might want to make some little notes in the margin or something just so that you have these as just some... This is some extra information that when you're studying with someone, you can charge them extra for this. Okay? All right? The Mosaic Age goes all the way to what point in history? To the Christian Age. Okay? So we have the Patriarchal Age, which includes, you know, from again, the story of creation with Adam goes all the way through to the time of Moses. We've got, you know, Abraham, Isaac, Jacob, and so forth, all of those folks during that particular period. We look at then the Mosaic Age, which comes from the beginning of Exodus, the Israelites leaving Egypt. They get the law, okay? And that will carry the Israelite people all the way to the time of Christ. okay, where the Israelite people are living under the law of Moses, okay, and that's why it is referred to as the Mosaic Age, okay? And then, of course, the last period of history is the Christian Age, and that's what we're in now, okay? So, does that any questions about that, or is that completely thrown everybody off track here? Okay. So, in terms of the books of the Bible, up to now we've only covered five of them. Okay. Now, as you turn your page over and look at the back, where we're going to be going, this next section, we're going to cover a lot of the rest of the Old Testament specifically. Really, really quick, okay? In this outline that we're looking at, basically, again, because we're looking at a skeleton outline here, we're not going to go into all the specific details of each one of these particular events, but we're looking at a lot of information, a lot of area of the Bible that is going to be covered here. So my point is, you're going to get the skeletal information here. There's an awful lot of meat that needs to be added to the bones in this section, okay? But again, focus on the skeleton first, okay, and get that down. Then you have time as you're studying to add the rest of the stuff. So, last time we finished up with looking at the Israelites coming to the Promised Land the first time. Okay, they get to the Promised Land, and what do they do? What happens here? They send out the spies. 12 men went to spy out Canaan. 10 were bad, 2 were good. You know, the spies come back. The 10 of them give the bad report, 2 give a good report. Because of their unfaithfulness, God does what with them? Okay, but how does He punish them? Okay, they're going to wander in the wilderness for 40 years. Why 40 years? Okay, that whole generation is going to die. They're not going to be allowed to go into the Promised Land, but it's 1 year for each day the spies were in the land. Okay, so they're going to wander for 40 years. That whole generation of adults is going to die in the wilderness. Because God has said they're not going to be allowed to enter in because of their unfaithfulness. With the exception of who? Joshua and Caleb. Okay, because they were faithful and said, yes, we can take this land, God provided that they would be allowed to enter into the land. Who else isn't going to get to enter into the land? Moses. Okay, why didn't Moses get to go in? Okay, this is just some of that extra little meat you start putting on the bones. Okay? How did he disobey him? Okay? What did he do specifically? I got a lot of just kind of... Okay? Okay? Right. The main thing that he said was, must we... You see, he basically was taking credit for himself, and he didn't do what God had told him to do. And because of that, God said, you're going to get to see the Promised Land, but you're not going to get to enter into it. Now, you know, again, that's one of those things that, you know, you can spend some time in looking at and so forth, and there's a lot of questions about that. Well, you know, Moses was the one that God chose to, you know, bring the people out of Egypt, and they were an obstinate, stubborn people, and Moses had to put up with them, and, you know, all these other things. So why did God punish Moses this way and so forth? Well, you know, Moses had put up with the people for quite a long time, hadn't he? Okay? Was it time for Moses to be able to go home to his glory? See? Was it such a terrible thing that Moses was not able to actually step foot into the Promised Land, but he was able to go up on the mountain and look and see the land, and then God brought him home? See? So there's a lot of different ways to look at those kinds of things, okay? Now the Israelites have wandered in the wilderness now for 40 years. They come back, okay, to the edge of the Promised Land. They're there at the Jordan River. They're about to cross over. Before Moses dies, what does he do? besides going up on the mountain and seeing the promised land? Okay? Okay. Joshua is installed to take Moses' place as the leader of the Israelite people. So it's not going to be Moses that will take the Israelite people into the promised land. It's going to be Joshua. Now, one of the things that is kind of significant about this, if you look on your outline here, Moses or Joshua, he takes over the leadership after Moses dies. He takes the people into the promised land and conquers it. Okay, what does that imply? What does that tell us about Joshua and his leadership here? Okay, Joshua is a military leader, isn't he?
Yeah.
So this taking of the promised land is going to be a military campaign. Okay, and Joshua is going to be the one that is going to be leading, you know, the not only the people as a whole, but he's going to be leading the Israelites in battle as they go into the land and conquer that land. There's two very significant stories. I've got one of them on here that have to do with this taking of the land and so forth. Of course, the first one is the city of Jericho. What happens with the city of Jericho? Okay, yeah, you know, it's you know, and again, you know, the meat of the story is that the scriptures describe the size of the city, you know, the thickness of the walls, and in other words, this is a very formidable city here in terms of being able to conquer it, and yet God says, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take the people, and you're going to march around the city one time for 7 days. And then on the seventh day, you're going to do it 7 times. And at the end of that, you're going to blow the trumpets. And when you do, the walls are going to come down. And you're going to rush in and take the city. Does all that happen? Yep, it all happens. And I know it happened because we reenacted it right out here in the lawn last year, right? They were very successful in this very first campaign after they have crossed into the promised land. Now, one of the things that we mentioned last week in this, as we were just kind of touching on this, just briefly, how did they enter into the promised land to begin with? On dry ground. When they came back to, you know, the river to cross over, the river was at its flood stage, right? And so, again, it's a how are we going to get across the river type of a thing. And yet, when the priests carrying the ark first put their foot into the edge of the water separated, and they were able to cross the river on dry ground, and they went into the land. They come to the city of Jericho, and as God had told them they would, they conquered that city. So, Peggy, you got something you about ready to say?
Yeah. And I think some speakers say that, not just Christ, but that was a form of baptism.
Of the... crossing the Jordan, well, it's a parallel thing to, you know, what Moses did in them crossing the Red Sea, and of course Peter makes mention of that, you know, when he's talking about it, them and references that to baptism. Okay, go over to, let me find it real quick here. Where he talks about them being under the cloud. Let me find it here. Somebody else can find it quicker than I do, then tell us where it is. I can't remember for sure. With my new Bible, I'm not familiar where everything is just by looking at it anymore, because I know my other one where things are. So now I have to look. Yes, we're in.
Is it in Romans?
It's in First. It's either in First or Second Peter. I think it's in First Peter.
The two things are oil, water, and fire.
Oh, you're thinking of a different passage that Paul talks about there, but this one that I'm thinking of is where a lot of folks, you know, attribute that. And again, I think that because of Peter, what Peter says about it, that's a legitimate. Okay. Okay. Yeah, that's where I was thinking. I think it was Peter that said that. No, I'm wrong. Wrong. Okay. I'm sorry. Where is that?
1 Corinthians
10. Okay. All right. Thank you for getting straight on that. So, but that's where it is, that association with that. Okay. All right. So, you know, they enter into the promised land. They conquer the city of Jericho. And because they have, you know, basically this has come pretty easy for them to conquer this, you know, massive city that's well fortified and so forth, they come up against their next challenge. And what happens? They go to the city of Ai, okay, and because they don't inquire of the Lord, what happens to them? They get defeated. Okay, they already after that first victory, they start getting you know, thinking too highly of themselves, and so they go about trying to do things on their own. Basically, the folks there, what did the people of Ai do? They tricked them, basically. You know, the people of the city there thought, you know, hey, there's no way we're going to be able to defeat these people because God's with them, and, you know, so we got to do something here. So they dressed up in, you know, worn, tattered clothing and everything and pretended to be travelers and so forth. And basically the Israelites said, oh, okay, well, we don't need to worry about that. And it turns out that they were actually from the city and they were the soldiers, and they ended up being defeated. So the Israelites had to learn, you know, an important, valuable lesson there, which is basically what? Yeah, quit relying on yourself and trust in God, okay? Message that is still important for us today, you see? And especially, and again, we talk about it all the time, when we talk about spiritual warfare and we're looking at, you know, the fact that we're in the midst of spiritual warfare. You know, how often do you find yourself trying to go at it alone and fight against Satan on your own, and you keep getting defeated and keep getting defeated, and you don't understand why? It's maybe because you're not trusting in the power of God. See? And allowing God to help you to fight those battles. And so there's an important lesson there for us to learn from them as they go about doing that. Now, basically, we're following our outline here. Again, I mentioned to you a few moments ago, this section here, we're going to cover a whole lot of Bible history, a lot of years, and then a lot of books of the Bible in a very short time for the remainder of this particular part of it. Basically, what happens from here is the Israelites, they go into the land of Canaan. Eventually, they conquer the land. Read through the book of Joshua, and you know, you find out about all these different things that occur and so forth. That's the meat you want to put onto this. And then we enter into the book of Judges, okay? The period of the Judges. The end of the book of Joshua, what happens? Joshua challenges the people to decide whether they're going to follow God or they're going to follow men and so forth. And Joshua dies, okay? That generation of leaders dies. And if you look in the book of Judges, chapter 1, okay? After the death of Joshua, the people of Israel inquired of the Lord, who shall go up for us up first for us against the Canaanites to fight against them. And basically what we find happening is, what kind of leadership do they have amongst the Israelite people. Do what? Well, God is trying to lead them, but the Israelite people aren't, they're not complying, they're not following. Okay? And so what's going to happen in this particular period, the book of Judges, in this period of history, okay, of the Israelite people is that they're going to go through what is oftentimes referred to as the cycle of the judges. Okay? You remember hearing that in your classes there, Colonel? Okay. A vicious cycle, okay? Because what happens is the people are basically doing, you know, what they want to do. They're disobedient to God. Okay? And so God allows them then to be oppressed by their enemies. Now keep in mind, technically they've conquered the land, right? Okay? But there are still, you know, Gentile peoples there and you know, countries and nations of people that are there, and they're harassing them here and there and so forth. So what happens is they go through this period where they're disobedient to God, so God allows them to be harassed by their enemies. Well, after, you know, a while, you know, they decide, hey, we can do better than this. So they call out to God and say, God, you know, we're sorry, we repent, please, you know, help us, deliver us, free us from our oppressors. And God sends a deliverer in the form of one of these judges. Okay? Colonel?
This cycle goes all the way back to Deuteronomy, the covenant that they made with God. He describes to them blessings if they follow the covenant, and then the curses are the things that they experience in Judges, and
right,
you know, beyond that, it goes back to the promise they made to God.
Everything that he said. Right. Exactly. If you look in Judges chapter 2, we find this these statements that give us an indication of what's going on here. It starts out by telling us, the angel of the Lord went up from Gilgal to Bochim, and he said, I brought you up from Egypt and brought you into the land that I swore to give you to your fathers. I said, I will never break my covenant. And that's what you're talking about here. And you shall make no covenant with the inhabitants of this land. You shall break down their altars, but you have not obeyed my voice. What is this you have done? So now I say, I will not drive them out before you, but they shall become thorns in your sides, and their gods shall be a snare to you. And so, you know, that kind of lets us, it kind of sets the stage for us of God saying, okay, you've been disobedient to me, then I'm not going to follow through with what I told you I would do because you didn't do what you said you were going to do. You're going to be harassed by these people, okay? You continue reading on. Joshua dies, and I'm looking for the statement here. Verse 11, the people of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord and served the Baals. And they abandoned the Lord, the God of their fathers, who had brought them out of the land of Egypt. They went after other gods from among the gods of the peoples who were around them and bowed down to them. And they provoked the Lord to anger. So, you know, here's the circumstance. So they disobey. God allows them to be oppressed. They call upon God and repent. God sends a judge. Now, the word judge here, when we look at this, typically when we think of a judge, what do we think of? Okay, somebody sitting in a court that's making the decisions and so forth. Basically, these judges were not that kind of a judge. Although they were rulers and they were recognized by the people and they made decisions for the people, so in that sense they were, but mostly they were military leaders who were able to lead the Israelite people against their enemies and free them from the oppression. Okay? So the problem is that once they were freed from oppression, what did they do? They went right back to living in disobedience to God again, you see? And then after a while of being oppressed, they repented, they called upon God to deliver them, and God sent another judge. And this, that's why it's called the cycle of the judges. This cycle just keeps repeating over and over and over again throughout this time period. Okay? And it's just, you know, one after another. Some of the judges, the prominent judges during this time, who can you think of? Samson? Deborah? Gideon? Okay, those are probably the three most prominent. There's several others. Again, there's a lot of interesting read here in this period of history. A lot of interesting things that are going on. But that's basically what's happening during this period of Israelite history. It's the period or the cycle of the judges where it just keeps going round and round the same way. We have a time of rest and freedom for the people. They become disobedient. God allows them to be oppressed by their enemies. They repent, call upon God for deliverance. He sends a judge. They're freed from their oppressors. And they enjoy a time of rest again, and then they become disobedient, and the whole cycle just keeps on repeating itself over and over and over again. Okay? So that's basically the cycle or the time of the judges. Now, from this point on, we're going to get into the period of what is referred to as the United Kingdom. Okay. Now, there's a lot of material in here, okay, before that. Okay, the story of Ruth and so forth is all in there. Again, a lot of meat there. But for our purpose, we're not going to be looking at that particular part right now. We go to the kingdom, or the period of the United Kingdom. Okay. This is the point where the people have kind of, you know, gotten weary of this cycle of through their history and so forth, and they came to a conclusion. And they realized something that was different about them than there was about all the other nations around them. And what was it? They didn't have a king. Okay? The Bible tells us there was no king in Israel, and everyone did what? They did what was right in their own eyes. Okay? And so there is no king, and the people are just going through this, you know, mess over and over and over again. Finally, they decide, look, if we had a king like all the other nations around us, then we'd have somebody to defend us and fight our wars for us and, you know, and protect us and so on and so forth. So we want to have a king. Okay? And during this particular time, this period of the judges and on up, through the period of the kings, in this early period here, who basically is recognized as the leaders of the people, at least religiously? Okay, Samuel. Okay, we have basically we're looking at the prophets here, aren't we? You see that religiously speaking, this is a period where the people are looking to the prophets for, you know, answers from God and guidance from God, and, you know, those. When they get into trouble, it's like, okay, you know, what do we need to do here? And they turn to the prophets and so forth. But they come to this point where they decide that in order for them to stop this, you know, vicious cycle and so forth, and, you know, and find rest and all that, that we need to have a king. Okay? Now, Samuel is kind of hurt by this, isn't he? Okay? But God's words to Samuel are what?
Not you, but they rejected you.
That's right. God reassures Samuel, they are not rejecting you, they are rejecting me. Because God considered himself to be, and he was, their king. The king over the Israelite people. The problem was they just weren't following him. Okay, Colonel?
And he describes his model for what he wants the king to do,
Well, and at this particular point, he warns them of what, you know, when you get a king, here's what the king's going to do. He's going to take your sons, he's going to take your daughters, he's going to take your crops, he's going to, you know, because he's going to have to provide for, you know, his empire and so forth. So you just recognize that's what's going to happen, you see. Yeah, he's going to tax them because, you know, hey, you gotta have stuff to run a kingdom, right? So they were warned. But yet God gives them a king, all right? And we go through this particular period, which is referred to as the United Kingdom, okay? It's referred to as the United Kingdom because during this period of history, the Israelites were, for all practical purposes, they were united under one king, at one king at a time, okay? There were three kings that served during this time period. The first one was who?
Saul.
Okay? Saul was a very, you know, stately man. He was, you know, taller than everybody else. He's a big guy. You know, he fit the profile of a king in their mind, someone who was going to, you know, be able to lead them in victory in the warfare and drive out their enemies and, you know, and so on and so forth. So Saul becomes the first king of Israel, the first human king of Israel. Okay? What happened to Saul? Okay? Became disobedient to God, became very arrogant in his position, and God said of Saul that he had done what concerning him? God said he repented that he had made Saul king. Yeah. The first incident concerning Saul's disobedience to God was what? Right? God said, "Now I want you to go and destroy the Amalekites. I want you to..."
Everything.
Okay, yeah. How bad did he want them destroyed? Everything. Destroy everything. Don't keep back anything for yourselves. Okay? So they went, they conquered the Amalekites, and they are coming back, and they meet Samuel on the road, right? And what does Samuel find? Because God has called, sent Samuel to go and meet Saul. And what does he find? He finds that not only has he kept the cattle and the sheep and so forth, but he also kept the king, King Agag, alive. Okay? And so Samuel confronts Saul, and he says, you know, why didn't you do what God told you to do? And Saul said, what? I did do everything that God told me to do. And then Samuel says to him, well, if you obey God, then what is this lowing of cattle and this bleating of sheep that I hear? You say, in other words, you know, hey, Saul... here's the evidence right here, and Saul basically is saying, but the men, they're the ones who wanted to, you know, do this and so on and so forth. And God's response to all that was what?
To obey better.
Yeah, to obey is better than sacrifice. See? That God, and what is that important message for us today? Same thing. Though we don't offer animal sacrifices, you know, and so forth today as they did under the old law, because again, as we talked about earlier, it never applied to us anyway, but we still are to offer what as a sacrifice? Now offer ourselves, Paul says in Romans 12, as living sacrifices. But in that, it is better to obey. See, God wants us to obey His will. Do what He says. You see? Do what He says. Right? So, basically, God repented or changed His heart and mind that He had made Saul king, and He begins working on replacing Saul with another man by the name of David. Okay? David is described as a man after God's own heart. Okay? Again, we're looking at a period of history here. There's a lot of meat to read in these stories concerning how all of this happened and so forth. But Samuel was told to go and to anoint the next king of Israel. He goes to Jesse's house and he anoints David. And so David is set up to become the next king, but he doesn't become king right away, right? Because Saul is still alive, he's still king. And so there is this succession of events that take place where Saul becomes further and further away from God, you see, and David is being brought closer and closer to God, okay? To the point where Saul is even, you know, in many different attempts to take David's life because of his jealousy of David and so forth. And he pursues David to try to kill him and so forth. In this particular whole point in history, there's a very interesting story, and I like to tell people about this just to get them to, you know, encourage them, go and read this and so forth, is the relationship between David and Jonathan. Okay? Jonathan is who? Saul's son. Okay? And there's some really, really interesting stuff going on here and really some great story lines in this about the relationship between Jonathan and David, even to the point that Jonathan realizes and knows he's not going to be the next king, that David is going to be the next king. And by human standards and so forth, we might typically expect that in that kind of a thing, what would happen to their relationship?
Jealousy.
Yeah, jealousy's going to set in and that's going to be severed and, you know, so forth. But instead, because of the love that the two of these men had for one another, the relationship they had, you see, Jonathan accepts God's will in this whole thing, doesn't he? You see? And he supports David in this, even against his own father. You see? Right?
The sad part about Saul is that once when God, he really didn't have any more dealing with the Lord.
Yeah.
Until, even Samuel had passed.
And it shows how far a person can go when they reject God and they quit following what God has told them, that how far, you know, away the person can really go away from God in a relationship with Him. So God replaces eventually, and again, this is some really great read, you know, it's really a lot of powerful stories in here that can relate back. But that's the meat you want to put on these bones here, okay? So David eventually, you know, Saul dies in battle along with his son Jonathan. They die in battle. David then becomes king, and he's now the second king of Israel. During David's time, David is credited with writing many of the Psalms that we have in the Bible now. We don't have the time in this study to go through all of the stories about David, but there's some really awesome, powerful stuff going on there. And then finally, David passes away, and his son Solomon becomes the third king during this particular period. Okay, Solomon is one that is credited with writing many of the Proverbs, also the book of Ecclesiastes. He is also the one who had the temple built. David wanted to build a temple to the Lord, but God said, "You're not going to be the one," because David was a warrior king. But his son Solomon is the one who had the temple built for God. One of the things about Solomon is that he is basically the one who is known for what, Jerry?
Wisdom.
Wisdom. Okay. He the whole story of how, you know, when Solomon first became king and what he asked God for. God told him, you know, ask for anything. And Solomon, instead of asking for riches, he asked for wisdom. God gave him both. And so Solomon then is the king and reigns through the end of this period. Okay, we're out of time, so next week we'll pick up with the next section that is referred to as the divided kingdom. But again, keep in mind that so far we've just run through a whole large time frame of history here, just covering those particular periods. All right? Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.